Thanks so much, Rachel. It's great to be here again. Actually, our story begins a couple of years ago when I was presenting the results of a randomised control trial on the impact of crime maps. You might not remember it. I was standing next to Bernard Hogan-Howe at the time, so you're probably concentrating more on him. But as a footnote of my presentation, I said that the randomised control trial we were doing, we were also wanting to carry out a test of Tom Tyler's procedural justice theory, the first full test within the UK. So this is what we were trying to test in our large national probability survey. This is sort of Tom Tyler's model of procedural justice, which I hope you're kind of reasonably familiar with. So he argues that public cooperation with the police and public compliance with the law isn't grounded in instrumental incentives, the chance of being caught or punished for their acts. It's mainly grounded in personal morality and in police legitimacy. And he goes on to argue that police legitimacy is grounded in perceptions of the police being fair. So this idea that the police make fair decisions and that the police interact with the members of the public in a fair way. Now, we carried out a survey in the UK, and it kind of supports that same model. So there's a strong empirical and theoretical base for what Tom's saying, both in the US and in the UK. But it leaves us with a bit of a question. Okay, so we think that fair treatment by the cops helps encourage this kind of really positive process. What does that mean? What can you actually do to get cops to act in a fairer way? Well, there are a whole range of different interventions that you could implement, but one of the most obvious ones is training. Now, the second thing happened at my presentation on my Crime Maps RCT a couple of years ago is Steve Curtis was very keen for me to work in his capability support unit within the MPIA. And that's a team that goes out to forces to provide support on particular performance issues. Now, they were working in Manchester at the time around some governance and performance issues. And they had a particular problem with victim satisfaction. At the time, they were 42nd out of 43 forces in terms of overall satisfaction levels. And they were wanting to kind of introduce some new things to kind of boost them up the league tables. Now, their initial suggestion was carrying out some kind of force-wide training on what does customer service mean. So not very sort of evidence-based, but more about what the meaning of customer service meant. So working with Greater Manchester, we saw there was an opportunity for them to sort of slow down a little bit, to think about what a better training intervention might look like that was evidence-based, and to evaluate that through a randomised control trial design. So we were taking an opportunity that was naturally occurring and sort of carrying out a trial in a fairly low-cost way. Okay, so what did the intervention look like? Well, Andy will explain a little bit more about what the training consisted of, but we were very keen to ensure that it was based on kind of the best available evidence. Now, at the same time, colleagues in the MPIA had carried out a rapid evidence assessment about what works in training. So this is like a systematic review, but it's done over a much shorter time frame. So it's perhaps not so comprehensive, but gives you a good sense of what the evidence is saying overall. Now, the REA on what works in training kind of sifted thousands of abstracts, largely from healthcare and education. I think they came across one study from policing that was non-experimental. But it was pretty much saying that for training to be effective, it works better for it to be integrated within routine practice and to kind of follow some reflective practice techniques. So you're thinking about what you're doing and you're carrying out your learning through a kind of within a safe environment. It also suggests that scenarios-based training, so again, practice-based training, is much more effective at behaviour change than traditional classroom-based training, which is more focused on knowledge. Now, we also know from work in victim satisfaction, not experimental research so much, but more about survey-based research, that treatment factors, so the way officers interact with members of the public, is probably more important to victim satisfaction than things like the outcome of the case. So we wanted to bring these sorts of ideas together in the intervention that was being implemented. Okay, so what did we do? Well, we randomly selected 600 officers from across GMP, all response and neighbourhood officers. We followed a simple parallel groups design, so we allocated 360 of those officers to the treatment group and 240 of those to the control group. Now, the 360 officers went through the training programme. There are three different variations of the training programme lasting between two or three days. Very much focused on giving them practical communication skills. Not really about knowledge about what customer service meant, but very much focused on better equipping them to interact better with victims of crime. Now, what were we expecting the training to impact on? Well, we had a number of different outcomes. We were using an officer attitude survey because we thought that by understanding the needs of victims better, they would understand more about delivering quality of service. We also were going to use the Attitude Survey to get a handle on self-reported behaviour through interactions and perhaps some insights about their interactions with the public and the extent to which the public wanted to cooperate with them, so playing into Tyler's theory of procedural justice. We also brought a sample of officers from the treatment and the controls group back into the training environment and filmed them within a sort of a mocked-up scenario to see whether they could also walk the walk as well as talking the talk. GMP, like all forces, carry out a victim satisfaction survey. Fortunately, we were able to link victims within that satisfaction survey to officers in our sample, so we were able to see whether victims of crime notice officers interacting with them better or not. And then lastly, we've been carrying out interviews with officers who've been through the training process in a qualitative sense, so we can get a little bit of a better understanding of what's happening within that black box. So overall, we've got a kind of really robust design. We're in the midst of doing the analysis at the moment, so we've got some early findings from the survey and some of the other things we're still waiting to look at. But at this point, I'm going to hand over to Andy, who's going to talk about the training intervention. And I do have to say that Andy's been an absolute star within this. He's been developing the training programme, he's been delivering the training programme, and, you know, and without him, we really don't think this would have flown, and so I do congratulate Andy for his support. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. It is a bit of a pleasure and a privilege to actually be here to speak to you. This is something that I'm really, really passionate about, and when you look at that first slide there of mine, and this is an officer's response to the training. I'm possibly not as good at giving empathy as I was when I started as a PC. You just become very much job to job to job. What's happened? What's happened with that officer where the process is overtaking the experience? Alex earlier on said from their survey, all I want is an officer is to stop and talk to me. All I want is an officer to listen to me. We're getting right down to the core here, the basics of what policing is about. It's providing a service and getting that service right and getting the balance of process and experience. The process has to be completed. But if it overrides the experience of the individual, then we're doing ourselves a disservice. So, in terms of the training, we've just put some of the headings there of some of the key areas that we delivered on the training programme as a pilot. So, what we were trying to do is ensure that our officers know how to treat people as individuals and not just another job. And that we build confidence, trust and reassurance in the service that we're providing. So there's an empathy technique. It's a three-step empathy model that we take officers through. It's about engaging with people's emotions. People will repeat and repeat until they feel that they're heard. If we don't engage with the emotional side of somebody and tap into that, the person is going to feel that we're not taking them seriously, we're not treating them as an individual. So we look at an empathy technique that any officer can use, three steps, quite simple technique. It's not rocket science, but it's very, very effective. Advanced rapport, what the heck's that? Well, basic rapport, as we know, is just the fact that when you're with somebody that you get on with, your body language, your MVCs will match. So we look at advanced rapport, we look at MVC skills and body matching skills to tap into another person's psychology so that they feel that we're engaging with them again. So we look at some MVC skills there. Positive acknowledgements. These are phrases, these are words that we can use that, again, work with the individual. So, I understand, certainly, I can help you with this. Key phrases that will help that person come on board, calm down, you're treating them as an individual. Signposting. In very, very simple terms, we're going to explain what we're doing and why. I wonder how many of your repeat callers are all about the fact that they don't know what's happening next and then need to ring back to find out what's going on because we've not spent that time to explain the processes and what we're going to do. Using names. What does it say about you as an individual and about what you're saying and the value of what you're saying if you give your name to what you're giving? It absolutely speaks volumes. Hi, I'm PC Andy Mills. I can help you with this. What we're going to do now is this, and the reason we're going to do that is because I'm engaging you in that process. I'm making you part of the decision-making process. Saying no positively. Sometimes, as police officers, we're going to have to say no. We're going to have to say no to somebody, but perhaps their expectations are too unrealistic for what we can provide. But let's couch that no in a positive way. What I can do for you is this. What I suggest is this. What we suggest to people who find themselves in this same situation. It's a positive acknowledgement. It's a positive no. And agreement to go. Again, just common sense. Let's say to the person, I've done everything that I need to do here now. Is there anything that you want to ask me before I go? Is there anything that you need clarification on? Is there anything you want me to explain to you? Make sure that we've covered all the bases with that person. Once we've done that, we're going to say, thanks very much, thank you for your time, thank you for that information, thank you for bringing this to our attention, thank you for your courage, thank you for your patience. But we're giving that acknowledgement. And through that, we're going to be using names as well, coming back to that. So that's a very, very brief overview of a three-day course. But what we do is we couch it within NLP, neuro-linguistic programming, communication skills, and we spend time discussing and debating within the classroom environment with officers the benefits, the absolute massive benefits, not only to the customer, whether that's a witness, victim, offender, whoever it might be, the benefits to them as well as an officer. It brings down stress levels, it increases intelligence because people are more prepared to talk to you, it increases that confidence, that trust, and that reassurance. And our best advocates are the public that we serve. It's as simple as that. So we've got to look at how we ensure that our customer service and our customer satisfaction is at the forefront. It's within the DNA of everyday policing. So what I would say is, as we ran the pilot, there was a little bit of trepidation from one or two that came on the course. I've made a note here. My favourite one that I used to get when we ran the pilot was officers saying, do you know what, Andy? I know lots of people who need this training, but not me. Lots and lots saying that. Okay. I'll just move on to the next one. So, Paul's mentioned about the scenario-based. Yes, we did 2 days in the classroom, going through the various communication skills and techniques, discussing and debating, and then we followed that up with our scenario-based learning. At our training centre at Sedgley Park in Manchester, we've got a mock-up of a living room. We've got hidden cameras, and we can record and we can watch in a separate room. So we put all the officers that were going through the scenario based through a scenario. We looked at volume crime issues. We looked at police in everyday issues. So the role-play scenarios were based on antisocial behaviour. They were based on theft of property, neighbour disputes, the everyday stuff that officers are dealing with, and we put them into a scenario, we film them, dealing with one of the training team who would push their buttons to try and get them to react, but if they used the techniques, we would respond accordingly with the fact that they were using the techniques that we'd gone through. Fantastic piece of training, brilliant responses and that we got from it. The scenarios normally lasted around about 10 minutes, and we weren't really that concerned whether they got a result, whether they solved the problem. We were more concerned with how the communication went. And we would then give the officers time to reflect. They would go and do a self-reflection form. They would think about it, take themselves through the ELC model of how they've performed, what worked well, what didn't work well, and why. And then they had a 30-minute one-to-one tutorial with one of the training team who took them through their role-play scenario, and we would play the film back if there were areas for development or there was areas that we wanted to say that was fantastic. And again, anecdotally, some people would deny that they ever said or didn't say But when you can play it back on the film, it really works well and is effective. So that feedback session was absolutely fantastic. And we've got that quote there: you're taking out your comfortable classroom environment when you've got everyone around you and there's no pressure. I do think the scenarios are beneficial. I always come out of them and reflect on what I've done, and you think about it for a longer period of time than if you were just in the classroom discussing it. Quite a long quote. The shorter one was, I was surprised how good the role plays were and what I got from it. Which I think says the same thing. Okay, I think I'll hand over to Levy.
The first thing for me to do is echo Paul's comments about Andy's help with this, because if you need a one-man RCT team, I think he's your man. He's done a wonderful job in Manchester, developing a great training programme, but also ensuring that we've been able to do a robust and meaningful experiment throughout the entire process. Now, what I'm going to talk about is some initial sort of exploratory analysis from the Officer Attitude Survey that Paul mentioned. So there's other arms to the analysis of this intervention that will be going on in the future. It's emergent research, and it was done in the time it was done to inform a business case for the future use of the training in Greater Manchester. So obviously, the use of the pilot and taking the pilot forward through a trial was there so that we could see if it actually worked. And obviously, that put some limitations on the time you have to actually deliver some findings to ACCs and other people who want to make a decision about their resources going forward. So that's the caveat I put with it. The thing to explain is that this is from the post-course survey, and I'll be going through the results of some t-tests that were undertaken to basically look at the direction of travel for those on the course. So we asked, you can see the response rates up there were very strong, but we asked people a series of actually 69 different items on a 7-point scale, and they were asked to indicate whether they strongly agreed, strongly disagreed on that scale. And we compared the means between the treatment group and the intervention group going forward into the analysis. So that's an idea of the kind of questions we were asking. And these 69 items came down into 14 broad themes, which are then sort of come into two areas that I'll discuss now. Oh, wrong way. There we go. So the first thing to know about this table, if there's two ticks there, it means that more than one of the indicators has gone in our expected direction. So the treatment group is performing better at a statistically significant level than the control group. If there's one tick, it's one indicator. Those dashes mean that we've not had any change there at all. So in terms of the actual techniques that Andy's been talking about that were taught on the course, you can see actually we've got a very good consistency of direction in the impact of this training on what officers are saying about their reported use of these techniques. The one thing that's quite interesting to note in particular is in terms of use of names. Now, from interviews, and we did 56 interviews with officers up in GMP, so about 20% of people who received training were actually interviewed. And the feedback we got from that is there's a huge cultural issue up in GMP about exchange of the first name in particular. And that's why we think that there's an issue going on here in that people aren't necessarily prepared to do that, but they'll buy into the other things and they'll actually report that they're using these techniques having learnt them. Okay. And then we've got things around officer attitudes. And when you think about what you expect training to achieve, attitudes are more difficult to impact, I think we'd all agree, than actually reported behaviour or reported techniques that people will be undertaking. And we've got, again, a relatively positive direction of travel here, but there are some issues that aren't working out quite so well. But what seems the most interesting from this work here is that the question is whether, if you can actually start to influence people's understanding of a victim, start to get people thinking in an empathetic way about victims again, rather than just another job, and if you can start to convince people that the force's priorities are actually around talking to customers, start that cultural change where it's not just about hitting your numbers or your detections, and then giving some idea of the benefits of this, you know, through procedural justice, then there's a chance that you may possibly be able to start changing the way people interact with the people they deal with on a daily basis. So as I said, there's more to come. This is the very initial steer of how things look, but we're very heartened by the way this looks. We're planning, as we go forward, to scale the items that we've got into proper themes using confirmatory factor analysis. We're also planning to look at whether we can turn this data. We've also got pre-data, so if we can turn it into a proper panel study of the officers involved in the training as well. And on that note, I think we just hand over to Andy to tell you where this is all going now for the future.
Excellent. So, moving forward, where are we at GMP? Well, you don't need me to tell you that it's essential that if we're going to improve our customer confidence, trust, and make them feel reassured, that we move forward with the training programme. The evaluation has been absolutely superb and instrumental because it's demonstrated significant improvements in a positive way. The business case has been put together and it's due to go to COG within the next few weeks for a force-wide rollout of the training programme to 6,500 officers and staff, constable to inspector. And the training is being included into our new recruits programme. We have new recruits starting in October, and the training programme is embedded already into their training programme, and I'm currently working on embedding it into their assessment process through the training programme and through their tutor phase. And we're also embedding it into our appraisal system as well. Training will provide so many things, but if you don't back it up with these things, then you're doing yourself a disservice. So GMP have embraced this fully, and we're moving forward with it. And just in case there might be a question, because we're talking about constable to inspector, what I can tell you is that there is also a senior leaders programme that's been put together, which is part of the business case, and we have a two-day programme for chief inspector up to and including chief constable, which will provide them with an insight and overview over the two-day content of the course that's being rolled out to PC to inspector, and also how they can champion and support the whole customer service ethic throughout the GMP family. Thank you.